It's just 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News. I'm Pat Moore. I'm your host today for Juneau Afternoon. We'll be talking with UAS in a few moments about their new career education programs opening up in the spring. We'll get some details on the weekend's Friends of Admiralty Islands presentation by artist Skip Wallen and some others who will be in the program. And we'll get the details on the Alaska Brewery's High Gravity Games coming up at Eagle Crest. And Judith Meyer will come up to tell us about some upcoming meetings relating to exchange students, and Amy Gulick will be here to talk about her fireside lecture tonight. Weather looks for windy, rain and snow showers, snow accumulations, probably looking at maybe a couple of inches overnight, and the same tonight.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. At the Tribal Nations Legislative Summit in Washington this week, tribal leaders tried to influence lawmakers and cabinet secretaries. But this fall, officials are also trying to have a bigger sway in elections across the nation. Matt Laszlo reports from Washington, D.C.
Numerous cabinet officials met with Native leaders this week, and some listened to concerns in Q&A sessions. But President of the National Congress of American Indians, Jefferson Keel, says his organization also helped tribal leaders fan out on Capitol Hill to bring Indian country's concerns directly to elected officials.
Providing talking points and other information. We have a packet that we give to our tribal leaders so that they can leave with the congressman. Points out all the priorities that we have, our position papers and things that we need to focus, particularly on the budget and all the other things that we need help with from Congress.
By lobbying lawmakers, Native leaders can have an impact if they can get their message through. But another way is to get Indian country's concerns debated within elections. More than 1 million Natives aren't even registered to vote, which NCAI's executive director, Jacqueline Johnson-Pada, says is something they're trying to change.
Particularly with those high populations of Natives, we're going to do a supplemental, they have a civics engagement class that they do in the high schools, and we're actually going to do a supplement for where there's high populations of Natives to that, so we can get them early and get them engaged early. We'll be able to do some tracking systems with them.
Native leaders say health services, education, and potential budget cuts are the top priorities for Indian country, and they're hoping that a large turnout of Native voters can get those issues front and center in this year's elections. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
Tribal, state, and federal officials have agreed to work together to do further sampling and collect more data of a town's water monitoring wells. The town is located on the Wind River Reservation. The move is expected to push back a final report to later this year on a possible link between water contamination and hydraulic fracturing in the area. Wyoming Public Radio's Tristan Autone has more.
In a statement by Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Lisa Jackson, the agency explained that it would work with Wyoming, tribes, and local residents to find an affordable long-term drinking water solution, and said more sampling would have to be done before a final report could be issued. In other words, the draft report tentatively linking water contamination in Pavilion to hydraulic fracturing released in December is still considered tentative, and a final report proving or disproving a link between the two won't be available anytime soon. As well, the EPA will leave public comment on the draft report open and has agreed to delay its peer review panel on that draft report until additional data from the U.S. Geological Survey can be made public. That USGS report will be available later this year as well. The EPA says a group of experts and stakeholders will meet with tribal and state officials at a later date to further discuss possible sources of contamination and identify risks to drinking water. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Autone.
A Washington tribe has received approval to run its own Title IV-E adoption program. The Port Gamble Squallam tribe says it's the first tribe in the nation to receive approval to govern guardianship assistance, foster care, and adoption assistance. The programs are overseen by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. According to the tribe, legislation was passed in 2008 allowing tribes to run their own Title IV-E programs with reimbursement from the federal department. Tribes have had to work with states on foster care and adoption programs. On this day in 1959, actor Rodney Grant was born. Grant was raised by his grandparents on the Omaha Reservation in Nebraska. He's best known for his role in Dances with Wolves as Wind in His Hair. Grant was chosen as one of the 50 most beautiful people in the world by People magazine in 1991. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use PIC, CLIC, GIVE when filing online for your PFD. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Well, in 30 seconds, it'll be 6 minutes after 3. You're tuned to KTOO FM in Juneau. And we have a fairly recent weather forecast. They updated it just about a little less than an hour ago. And the weather forecast calls for it to be windy for the rest of the day. We'll have rain and snow showers, but they're predicting no snow accumulation until this evening. The highs will be around 38. Temperatures will slowly fall through the afternoon, and we'll have southeast winds running from 10 to 20 miles per hour. And then tonight, we're looking at rain turning into snow. We're looking for an overnight snow accumulation that could be up to 2 inches. The snow level should drop to around 500 feet by evening. The lows will be around 31. And then we have southeast winds continuing 10 to 20 miles per hour. And then Saturday, we're looking at likely snow showers. They'll mix with rain in the afternoon, snow accumulation 1 to 2 inches. So if you got up early and they groomed the trails back there at the back loop, you might be able to get a lap of cross-country skiing before the rain turns the stuff into ice crust. So anyway, of course, Eagle Crest ski trails will probably be marvelous for the weekend. If they get a little dust on top of them, they'll be fast and fun to ski. And those snow showers are scheduled to pretty much continue through the evening into scattered snow showers at night. And then Sunday, it's mostly cloudy. They'll drop down to isolated rain and snow showers. The highs ought to be about 39 and northeast winds about 10 miles per hour. So could it be? Are we on the very verge of spring here? It could be. Certainly the plants are getting confused. I see buds in places where probably it's not a good thing for them to be out here already. So my first guest today is Dana Mackey. Dana manages the career education programs at UAS, and she's here to tell us about a set of programs that will be starting in January.
The first ones will begin actually March 20th.
March 20th. So they're just right around the corner.
They are.
And these are short courses, but they're not really, some of them are part of curricula for degrees, but most of these are aimed at just us folk, right?
They are. All of our classes that I'm going to be talking about today are classes that anyone can take, except for three classes, which are part of our BERT program. Our BERT program is our building.
Building. You're going to spell that,
yeah,
right?
Building Energy Retrofit Technician.
Okay.
There are three classes. That the first class actually begins on April 9th. It's a series of three classes, so it's a 3 week long, but at the end of that you will have an occupational endorsement after taking those three classes. It begins with our cold climate construction, then it goes to our building diagnostics and testing, and then our residential renovation and repair class. And we have a series of that is just wrapping up this week. So if you're interested, definitely give us a call.
I don't want to throw you for a loop, but what could someone do with that occupational endorsement?
Oh, you're going to throw me for a loop. Well, actually, what this BERT class, this occupational endorsement, actually satisfies the related instruction requirement for the BERT apprenticeship, which I believe is a national
I'm wondering, these are the guys that you have to hire to come in and do the measurements on your house if you're doing energy upgrades and
yes.
trying to get the reimbursement.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
So this is the start of the training for
it
that
is.
Program.
It is, yes.
And that, those are in demand. That's quite
highly in demand.
Yeah.
Highly in demand, yes.
Okay, so we're not messing around here. And
no.
Those three courses are only how long each?
They're only a week long.
A week apiece.
Yeah. And it's just a three consecutive week. You'll take each of those classes, and each class builds up to the other class. It's a very intense three classes.
Yeah, this is like 5 days a week, right?
Yes, it's five days a week. You're in class from 8 to 4. very intense, but if that is something that you are interested in, definitely give us a contact, and there is some funding available to be able to take those 3 weeks.
I was going to ask you what the cost for these courses looks like.
Well, each course is, our tuition is $462, so it's a 3-credit course.
So it'd be 3 times 462.
Yep. And then
there's probably some fees on top of that.
Okay. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. There
usually it can go up to like $200 if you're using a lot of facilities and stuff like that.
Actually, for this, each class, I believe, is $44 in fees.
Huh? Okay.
So times 3.
Yeah. And those fees, a lot of people don't understand that, but those fees really cover the cost of a lot of materials that is really hard to get access to any other way. I mean, you're touching stuff that you'd have to, that you just don't walk into a store and go buy.
It's true. So we have 2 different sets of fees. We have fees for the actual course itself, which do pay for anything that you're using in the class, which are sometimes things that are very specialized equipment. And then our other set of fees are for fees to be able to run the class. So our technology fee, mm-hmm. With being just associated as a student, those type of fees.
Right. Mm-hmm. So 3 credits to lead to the occupational endorsement in?
It's actually a total of 9 credits after you get all 3 classes.
Okay.
And that will be for the BERT, Building Retrofit or Energy Retrofit Technician.
Okay. And then what are the other offerings?
Our other classes that we have, I love being able to reason on this one. We have 2 different classes. If you are looking for a late spring, summer project, we have our Introductory to Landscape Design by Judy Sherborne that begins in 2 weeks on March 20th. And as that class revs up, our next class begins for Deck Building and Design by Robbie Jensen. That class begins April 13th. Mm-hmm. And so if you're looking for some of those summer projects or even just late spring projects, these 2 classes may be very beneficial for you to take.
Now, the deck building project actually concludes with them building one of the decks that's designed in the course of during the course.
They will choose a deck design. Yeah.
You still have to come up with the materials cost and all that sort of stuff if it's your deck, but some student in the class is going to get a deck built out of that class, if I understand that thing right.
Yes.
That ain't bad.
Not bad at all.
And again, that's a 3-credit course?
That is a 2-credit course.
A 2-credit course. So that'd be about $900 plus some lab fees and like that. 462 times.
It's actually 147 times 2.
Oh, 147 times 2. Okay.
Fast right. Math, anybody?
About $300. Okay. Good. All right.
And then we have 2 other classes that I wanted to talk about. One of them is if you are a heavy-duty diesel person and would like to learn more about heavy-duty brakes and CDL preparation.
The commercial driver's license. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
We have that class that, again, begins in a few weeks. March 19th is when that class will begin. And then we also have Fundamentals of CPR and First Aid. It's a 1-credit class. That class is actually just for a weekend during the weekend of April 20th.
And that certifies you for CPR?
Yes, yeah. CPR and first aid. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You'll receive those certifications after completing just that Friday, Saturday class.
So if somebody's interested in signing up for these courses, what do they need to do?
Mm-hmm. They could go to our website, our UAS website, which is www.uas.alaska.edu.
Very simple.
Or you could give us a call and we can direct you to wherever you need to or answer any questions. I know I have a phone message from someone who's already heard this on the radio. Our phone number is 796-6120. Again, 796-6120. And if you get an answer machine, you'll actually get my voicemail, and I will return your call within 24 hours or direct you to where you need to go.
And that number you're giving is the number for the School of Career Education.
Yes.
I think a lot of people know that the university actually has 4 schools,
yep.
And this is one of them. And the School of Career Education leads to degrees in such things as diesel technology and automotive technology.
Our School of Career Education has all of our applied technology classes, which is auto, diesel, construction. We do have some welding classes, and then it also is incorporating our health occupations, which is our health sciences. We have a pre-radiology, and then we have a pre-nursing that also our health occupations runs through. And I also want to say, for those that are unfamiliar with career education, we are the campus, the school that is located downtown.
Right.
And so our applied technology happens in our Technical Education Center, which is across the street from Juneau High School on the Egan side. And then Bill Ray Center is where our health occupation classes happen, and that's located on F Street.
Now, in that facility that's on the other side of the street there mm-hmm. is where they've placed that new mining technology simulator.
Our mining simulator is located in our Technical Education Center, our tech center is what we call it, yes.
And that's one of your associate degree programs now?
Actually, no. The simulator will be, it's part of our Center for Mine Training. But we actually have a mine mechanic. It's an occupational endorsement that will begin this fall. It's a one-year degree. And for more information, we have that on our website. I didn't bring all of the classes that it entails for that mining mechanic, but that is that will begin in the fall.
Good. Dana, tell everybody your phone number again.
796-6120.
For these courses that are starting as soon as like 2 weekends
yes.
from now.
Okay,
yes. Good. Well, give them a call. Sign up for the course.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming down. Music by Oregon. It's about 20 minutes, almost 18 minutes after 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News. Looks like a great weather forecast coming up for this weekend. We're talking about maybe picking up another couple of inches of snow and maybe in the mornings skiing possible before it starts to rain out in the afternoon. So a chance to maybe do the last little bit of cross-country skiing out on the back loop this weekend. A fun thing to do. I have guests in the studio who are principal planners for a major presentation, which begins tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock. K.J. Metcalf and Skip Wallen are here. Welcome, folks.
Thank you, Pat. Glad to be here.
And so we're talking about Admiralty Island Voices, right?
That's right.
All right. What's up?
Well, it's really a celebration. Admiralty Island is such an incredible place, and it's a national monument and national wilderness for the most part. And it just is a gift to all of us and to hopefully future generations. So what we hope is that folks will get a chance to better understand Admiralty and look at the potential for research and education and artistic endeavors. And it's just a celebration of an incredible place, and we've gathered together an amazing array of talent and thinkers and artists and scientists, and we're really excited about it. So we invite everyone to come. It starts at 2 o'clock, and a few opening remarks, and we go right into a science panel with John and Jan Straley, Matt Kirchhoff, Robin Motika, Buck Bryant, Joey Zuboff, and Richard Karsten is the moderator.
Now, there is a wealth of scientific experience in that panel. Jan Straley is a marine biologist. Matt Kirchhoff is the director of bird conservation with Audubon Alaska. Dr. Motika is a research associate professor with UAF, but also an affiliate for environmental sciences at UAS. And then Buck Bryant is a fish biologist and researcher, and he's been researching fish in Southeast Alaska for 30 years.
Right.
So this is, we've got a couple of hundred years of scientific skill and ability up on the stage in front
right.
of us for
and
that.
Joey Zuboff is from Angoon, and he is a cultural leader, and he'll bring to the discussion traditional knowledge.
Yeah. And that's becoming increasingly, I've noticed we have a number of programs. There was just this One Earth seminar that was held here in Juneau, which is one of the first times that I think I've seen elders and scientists and priests on the same stage mm-hmm. talking mm-hmm. about the spiritual and scientific aspects of global warming. It was quite a yeah. quite a novel and an interesting set of perspectives. Skip, you're a sculptor.
Yes.
And so you're not part of the science panel. You're part of the second panel of the day, I think. Is
indeed.
That right? Yeah. And that panel brings together a number of people. KJ, can you tell us who's on the
sure.
One
well,
that starts
Skip,
at 4:30?
We have John Howe, who is the author of Bear Man of Admiralty, and Lynn Schooler, who most everybody knows, who has written Blue Bear, among others, and is just his book was transformed into a stage play at yeah. locally, and it just did really well in Anchorage and got uh-huh. great reviews. And we have Jamie Daniels, who is a young man who is an incredible carver from Angoon, and Joel Bennett, who was interviewed a week ago on Juneau Afternoon, but is a photographer, writer, and filmmaker, and with world experience. And Sharon Lobaugh is the moderator. So that's a really exciting bunch of people, and I think it's going to be a great thing. Skip has had a lot of experience on Admiralty Island. In fact, he was part of the group that really began to talk about setting it aside as something special and working to preserve it. So I guess I'd be interested in hearing something about kind of your connection to Admiralty.
You know, I was thinking about this this morning. Now, Mark Russell, the comedian, was in Juneau some years ago, and he made a remark about the state capitol, the building, that it reminded him of the driver's motor vehicles department in Cincinnati, Ohio. And I was thinking to myself, well, yes, they may have more beautiful buildings, but they don't have the setting that we have in Juneau.
Right. Look
and
up.
And they don't have Admiralty Island.
They don't.
And
you're right.
There are very few cities in the world that can boast something like this.
The other thing they don't have is they don't have a really incredibly realistic bronze bear out in front of the Capitol building holding a fish and looking like he's defending his lunch. That's your work, Skip.
Yes, yeah. yes. And that actually started out over in Florence, Italy. I was looking at a marvelous sculpture of a wild boar done by a man during the Renaissance, about 1612. And I made the remark to my wife, wouldn't it be wonderful to try something like that with an Alaska theme.
Hmm.
I got back to Juneau, and there was a notice in the newspaper saying, we're looking for projects to celebrate the 25th year of statehood. And I thought, well, if we could have a bear, in the middle of Juneau would make people less indifferent to the bears that we have on Admiralty Island. Because
mm-hmm.
here, we, Admiralty Island, we can still celebrate our wildlife. We don't have to commemorate it.
The Admiralty has more bears, I think, than almost any other little chunk of land. That's the per capita count of bears is extremely high over there.
Right, about one bear per square mile. So there's something like maybe as few as 1,600 and maybe as many as a little over 2,000. Nobody really knows. But that concentration is an indication of how rich and productive Admiralty Island is.
I had some people on the show here a while back who I had the ranger from Admiralty. It's there's actually a Forest Service ranger that's in charge of that.
Yeah.
And he was talking about, is it Cache Creek?
Pack
Creek, that's it. Okay. And I guess at a certain time of the year, you can just see literally dozens of bears on Pack Creek catching salmon.
Right. Right. Now, it is a world-class destination for bear viewing. And it would be nice to have another such place on Admiralty Island. And this, we just had this program printed, and on the front is Admiralty Cove.
Mm-hmm.
And that would make an extraordinary place to view bears.
Skip, it's been said that you patterned the bear in your sculpture after bears that you had observed on Admiralty. I'm curious, what elements did that lead you to work into your sculpture? What did you see and then sculpt?
Well, I'm not sure how good a job I did of identifying an Admiralty bear versus, say, a Chichagof bear.
Okay.
But the bears on this island, the brown bears, are smaller than their cousins, say, on Kodiak Island or the Alaska Peninsula. However, the bronze bear is approximately the size of a large Kodiak or Alaska Peninsula bear.
Okay.
Well, one of which was weighed in June when they're at their lowest weight. Actual weight, 925 pounds.
Impressive. So the head of that sculpture
mm-hmm.
is, when you look dead on to that bear, it's almost capable of scaring you. I mean, it's that good. How did you, what do you do to catch an expression on an animal like that?
It's partly, I did not want a savage bear, uh-huh. like on the cover of a sporting magazine.
Right.
But what happened at the foundry, my original wax sculpture of the face had gotten into a patch of sunlight and had slightly changed things. And so the bear has a frown, a little bit of a frown, that has bothered me.
A sun-induced frown.
Yes. And I
only the artist would see
well,
it.
Well, I couldn't see it in the light. You always want to get your sculpture outdoors if you can,
uh-huh.
for ambient light. I couldn't see it in the foundry. And I didn't see it until we got the cast in bronze. And so at any rate.
I guess my take on it when I look at that sculpture is I think to myself that what the bear is saying is, don't mess with me. This is my fish. You know, and that actually comes across it. I think I'm not sure I'd argue that the frown does anything bad to the bear. At least it gives us a certain degree of respect for this 900-pound animal.
Well,
that one would weigh out about seven,
one.
Yeah.
But there's also another element in the piece that refers to Admiralty Island, and that is the giant Sitka spruce.
Ah, that he's standing
and
lying
chum,
on.
And the chum salmon,
yeah.
and the bear. Which are all part of a triangle, an ongoing triangle of life on Admiralty Island.
Now I have to go back and take another look at the sculpture.
I had to turn the claws down because I was afraid the kids would gaff themselves on them otherwise.
They climb up and they polish the ears, you were saying.
They polish the ears and the nose and the back, which is fine.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah, it's participatory sculpture at that point. And the kids from outside, it may be the only bear they see that close for sure. Anyways, a wonderful opportunity. And I see kids climbing on it all summer long. It's a really spokespiece for Alaska, for Juneau.
Well, thank you.
You know, puts a center
to,
on the table.
I have to mention that Skip and his wife Lynn donated that to Juneau as a reminder that Admiralty is just over the hill.
Ah, so, and we should go and see.
Right.
Yes. So Admiralty Voices starts at
2
in the afternoon, and then there's the second session with Skip and the other the others at 4:30, and then you have a potluck dinner. And then at 7:30, you have a speaker coming in.
Hank Linfer, who
yeah.
a lot of folks know.
We had Hank on the show last week. Mm-hmm. He did a fireside lecture out of
Correct.
The Visitor Center at the Glacier. Hank's written a book called Faith of Cranes.
And that book opens on Admiralty Island. So he has spent a number of years, he and his dad, who is a mm-hmm. wildlife biologist also, as is Hank. But Hank has become a... more like Skip. He started out as a wildlife biologist and then became an artist
mm-hmm.
and an author. And we encourage folks who have artwork that Admiralty has inspired to bring some of that and share it. So I think tomorrow is going to be an incredible day of celebration and listening to some talent that I don't know that you could get under one roof ever again. So I urge people to come, and it looks like it's not a real great day to be outside, so why don't you come inside?
KJ, what's the cost of the program?
Nothing.
Nothing. So it's free,
it's
to the public? Okay. And people should, if they're coming to the 6:30 potluck, they should bring a potluck dish?
Yeah, that would
share.
Be good.
Okay. Food for $25,000 would be... okay. And Skip, you'll be part of the panel presentation at 4:30.
Yes.
And we'll also be hearing from the science crowd at 2:30.
Right.
Sounds like an excellent way to spend a snowy, blowy, kind of rainy afternoon.
It should be a very fun day.
So, good.
And very informative. And it's going to be a great celebration.
Well, gentlemen, thank you very much for coming down and filling us in on this and inviting everyone to come over to the Jack tomorrow at 2 o'clock. For
2 o'clock.
The start of,
we're ready to go at 2. Thank
Admiralty
you.
Admiralty Voices. Thank you.
Thanks, Pat.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 9th of March, 2012. It's the birthday of a writer who called his own books the chewing gum of American literature. Crime novelist Mickey Spillane, born Frank Morrison Spillane, Brooklyn, 1918, son of an Irish bartender. He was selling ties in a department store when he met a co-worker whose brother produced comic books, and Spillane went to work for him, writing comics, and he invented a private eye named Mike Hammer. He turned out more than 30 novels, most of them featuring Mike Hammer, including Kiss Me Deadly, The Girl Hunters, Body Lovers, and The Killing Man. His books sold more than 225 million copies. It's the birthday of Vida Sackville West, born near Sevenoaks, England, 1892. Daughter of an English baron, she grew up in the ancestral mansion in Kent, a building with 365 rooms. She was beautiful, more than 6 feet tall, had dark eyes, fell in love with several women, some of them schoolmates. When she was 21, she married a diplomat, Harold Nicholson, even while she was in a passionate affair with another woman. She said of Nicholson, "Our relationship was so fresh, so intellectual, so unphysical, that I never thought of him in that aspect at all. Some men seem to be born to be lovers, others to be husbands. He was of the latter category. An unconventional marriage, but they remained devoted to each other for the rest of their lives, wrote to each other daily when they were apart, raised a son together. When Vida Sackville West was 30, she met Virginia Woolf at a dinner party, fell in love with her, they became friends, and then lovers. She was the inspiration for the main character in Woolf's novel, Orlando. Sackville West wrote more than 15 novels herself, but today she's better known for her writing on gardening. She wrote a weekly gardening column for The Observer for 15 years, and that's what is still read today. Here's a poem for today by Philip Booth, entitled Saying It. Saying it, trying to say it, not to answer to logic, but leaving our very lives open to how we have to hear ourselves say what we mean. Not merely to know, all told, our far neighbors, or here, beside us now, the stranger we sleep next to. Not to get it said and be done, but to say the feeling, its present shape, to let words lend it dimension, to name the pain, to confirm how it may be born, through what in ourselves we dream to give voice to find some word for how we bear our lives. Daily, as we are daily wed, we say the world is a wedding, for which, as we are constantly finding, the ceremony has not yet been found. What wine, what bread, what language song, we wake at night to imagine, and again wake at dawn to begin, to let the intervals speak for themselves, to listen to how they feel, to give pause to what we're about, to relate ourselves over and over, in time beyond time, to speak some measure of how we hear the music, today, if ever, to say the joy of trying to say the joy. Saying It, a poem by Philip Booth from his collection Lifelines, published by Viking, used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, iPad users can download the three most recent issues of Poetry Magazine, celebrating its centennial in 2012 at poetryfoundation.org. And by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Written by Betsy Allister, be well, do good work, keep in touch.
It's about 23 minutes to 4, and we're at KTOO in Juneau. Pat Moore, your host for the Juneau Afternoon Program. With me right now is Judith Meyer, and Judith is the person who works tirelessly to find homes for exchange students from Muslim countries. Hi, Judith.
Hi, it's good to be here.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to be here with you because I know you know some of these kids and know how wonderful they are. I'm working with students who are here on the YES Grant, which is Youth Exchange and Study, and it's a State Department-funded grant that was the initiative of the late Senator Ted Kennedy from Massachusetts and Dick Lugar from Indiana right after 9/11. And the initiative was to bring students from predominantly Muslim countries. And Juneau People for Peace and Justice met a couple of these kids 2 years ago who were down here from Anchorage, and it just seemed like the most sensible thing in the world to do, to bring young people ages 15 to 17 here for an academic school year. And this year we have four wonderful kids here, and I know Pat has heard them. He heard them present at the university. 2 years ago there were 35,000 applicants, and they placed 800. And the statistics last year were similar to that. We've got four kids here, and they're all at Thunder Mountain High School because that's where their host families were living. And but we're looking for three host families for next year. And we're going to have two meetings next week, one on Tuesday at Northern Light Church. And the kids will be present to present, and the pastor of Northern Light, Phil Campbell, has volunteered to moderate that panel. And then on Thursday at 7 o'clock, we'll be at Thunder Mountain, and the librarian at Thunder Mountain, Rondi Miller, has willingly agreed to moderate that panel. And she loves those kids. She has a special place in her heart for them, and it's so good that there are so many people in this community that are really embracing them. They're busy doing things at school, they're busy doing things in the community, and they have caring host families. So we're looking for people who would be interested in learning more about hosting, getting to know the kids. And next year we want to do an extension and have family close friends who will support the family in hosting, and so that the kids get even a wider experience. Mm-hmm. But they've been amazing, and I've had the good fortune of having lots of good times with them. And I think the really significant thing about hosting an exchange student, it is not a one-year experience. It goes on forever. I have a host brother from 1954, and when he comes to this country from Germany, my own children go wherever he is to see him. He's part of our family.
Yeah.
And this summer, our host student from Germany, 20, 30 years ago, I guess, is sending her 14-year-old for 5 weeks to spend time in Alaska because she loved it so much.
So
it,
Judith,
never ends.
What you're looking for, particularly in these two meetings, is people who might be interested in hosting a young boy or young girl who will be like a sophomore, junior.
They'd be 15 to 17 years old.
Okay.
Those are the ages. They'd be a sophomore or a junior.
They would come from a Muslim country.
Yes, and
would
we've
probably
already
be
been told
Muslim.
That they have a student from a girl from Egypt, a boy from Lebanon, that they're thinking they'd like to send to us, and we're looking at the heart of the Middle East because it seems like that's where we want to keep our focus right now.
Now, the four students that I heard when I went out to the session at UAS where they all spoke had excellent English. And I think that's probably typical of who comes.
Yeah, they are required to have studied English.
Right.
And, of course, it's a learning curve because they haven't used it as their language of communication.
Yeah, you get off the plane, you don't speak a word of it, but you get it pretty quick if you've studied it, so that works pretty well.
They're learning wonderful things, and the real result of this is what they take home and what they leave for the young people who've met them and call them friends.
Okay, and the times again that you're
7
looking
o'clock
for?
On Tuesday at Northern Light and 7 o'clock on Thursday at Thunder Mountain.
Okay.
And if anybody has questions, please call me. My phone number is 789-9229, and I can give you more information, not just about these meetings, but about how to get involved. And if you have questions about hosting, I'd be delighted to talk with you.
Wonderful, talking with someone who's actually done it. Judith, thank you so much for alerting people to this opportunity.
Thank you.
Shadowfax, taking us up to about 17 minutes before the hour. And we're talking next with people who have a great program coming up. I think it's, is it this weekend?
It is.
Yeah, it's High Gravity Games. So where is the gravity higher than 1G?
so High Gravity is
I should mention we're talking here with Ashley Johnson from the Alaska Brewery and Ernie Miller from the American Red Cross.
Gravity is actually a brewing term. Higher gravity means there's a higher amount of sugars.
Specific gravity,
yes, exactly.
Yes, okay,
yes.
All
if
right.
You're familiar with brewing. That's that's kind of our reference. Combining that with, you know,
with
high altitude and Eagle Crest and all the above. So
okay, so what's up?
This is our second annual High Gravity Games event. It's coming up this Sunday from 1:30 to 5 up at Eagle Crest. Last year was so much fun. We intended it to be a celebration for our 25th anniversary, but had to bring it back. And this year, the beneficiary of all proceeds from the event are going to the Red Cross of Alaska, which we're really excited about.
Which would explain why Ernie is
why
here.
Ernie's
I thought
here,
maybe
yes.
he was standing by to render first aid at the games or something.
You know, you're not the first person to think that.
Okay. We can do that.
Right. So you're the beneficiary of the program.
That's right.
Okay. What are you going to do with the money?
Well, I'll tell you what I do. I'm the disaster response person for Southeast Alaska.
Okay.
And all of the help that we provide to people who suffer from disasters is free, and it's from donations from the American people, is how we put it. A lot of people confuse the Red Cross. They think we're some kind of government agency and we get money from the government, but we don't.
Uh-huh.
We get money from donations, like the donations that the brewery and Eagle Crest are raising through this program to help our disaster clients in Southeast, and also to help us prepare volunteers from Southeast Alaska to go to other places to work on disasters like Hurricane Irene from last fall and that sort of thing. Most of the disasters that we have in Southeast Alaska are single-family fires, boat sinkings, landslides, avalanches, and they might put somebody out of a house for a few days or for a longer term. And many of the people that we help don't have a lot of resources, personal resources. So they're very appreciative of the assistance that we can provide for them.
Mm-hmm.
And how we do that is through the training of volunteers who actually go out and do the casework and commit the Red Cross's money that we get from donations to the people who need it.
So a most worthy use of the money that you're going to raise with the High Gravity Games. But back to the High Gravity Games for a moment or two here. The Startup Cup is at 1:30.
That's
correct.
What
is the Startup Cup?
The Startup Cup is a five-man, four-leg relay that starts with a downhill race. Skiers, snowboarders, men and women, it's done in three-man heats, race down to the bottom where they pass off to a Nordic Loop cross-country skier that then passes off to a snowshoer. Extra points for best dance moves. And then the fourth leg is the human dog sled, which is two people pulling the snowshoer on a sled to the finish line. Everybody dresses up in costume, extra points for best costumes. It's a lot of fun.
Uh-huh.
Then we've also got our crash course.
I'd ask what the winning time is, but does anyone care?
They do, actually.
They do,
people
they?
Actually took it really competitively.
What's a world-class time in these?
I apologize. I don't remember the times from last year, but it was down to the wire. I think one group won by a number of seconds.
By seconds. Mm-hmm, okay, mm-hmm. So this is a world-class competition.
There,
okay,
yep,
and
mm-hmm.
I'm seeing here it costs $75 to register if you do early bird. When's early bird end?
That has passed. The event's this Sunday. So
it costs $100 to register.
Yeah.
And 120 Saturday, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. 120 day of. But there is still...
But you get five T-shirts on the deal, right? Okay.
Yep. And all of the money, again, goes to the Red Cross. We do still have plenty of room for teams to sign up, so there's still time for people to grab some buddies. What's great about this event is you don't really need any... skiing or snowboarding ability.
So you can actually show up out there and suddenly become part of a team.
As long as it's before noon. If you have everything in before noon.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yep.
Okay, and then the keg toss starts at 3. I think I can figure that out, but I'll let you tell us the official rules.
It is pretty self-explanatory. It's actually more of a keg discus. We take about the top 10 inches of a keg, and you're chucking it up the hill for the longest distance.
Longest distance.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I'm assuming you have official umpires up there, red dressed in black and white striped shirts, who are marking the fall of the discus.
They're probably going to be in really warm clothing. But
okay. All right. And so what does the winner get here?
There's a whole host of prizes for each of the events. We are really lucky. A lot of local businesses, several of the helicopter companies, the zipline companies, Tracy's Crab Shack, Above and Beyond Tours have kicked in some really fantastic prizes for all of the events.
Not to mention a couple of kegs of beer, right?
There may be some beer involved, yes.
Isn't that one of the prizes for the keg toss, I thought?
There's
I
some brewery gift certificate.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
All right, now
mm-hmm.
I got it. Okay,
mm-hmm.
good.
Mm-hmm.
And then the crash-cooled dummy at 4 o'clock?
Yes, this is a really fun event. The only rule...
Bernie's not part of this, right? The dummy part.
This may be where he's on standby for us. But
okay.
The basically it's create... something on a sled, a skis, or a snowboard, and send it down the hill. It's judged by best crash, distance, and airtime, and creativity. The only rules are that it has to weigh less than 100 pounds, it can't be breathing, and it can't be on fire. So It's another fun
those,
one.
Those are amazing rules.
Yeah, no, right?
No, I'm excited. Okay, so this whole event starts, you have to be up there at noon to get registered for the whole thing. Mm-hmm. The first event, the Startup Cup, is at 1:30. It costs $100, $120 if you wait until tomorrow to mm-hmm. sign up. The money is all going, after you pay for the T-shirts and all that kind of stuff, is all going to the Red Cross mm-hmm. so that Ernie can use it for disaster relief in
Southeast
Alaska.
That's right. And even if you're not participating in the games, we will have a beer garden up there and all of the money from that. And we're selling some Jerry's Meats Amber beer brats. That's all going to the Red Cross. So come up, have a brat and a beer and...
Hey,
pretty good cup.
And watch the fun.
And
yeah,
the fun,
what a
yeah.
deal. Okay, well, go out to Eagle Crest this weekend and do the thing, I guess, huh? Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks. Minutes to 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO. This is Pat Moore. I'm your host for Juno Afternoon, and Amy Gulick is here in the studio with me. Amy is going to be doing the fireside tonight, and she's the author of Salmon in the Trees, an intriguing title for a book. Tell me about Salmon in Trees.
Well,
other than Ray Troll painting pictures of them up at the University of Salmon going through forest.
Right. That's actually yeah. one of my favorite murals.
Isn't that,
that
wonderful?
He's done. Yes.
Yeah.
And he's done that particular.
And you got a thing going with Troll. He's in your book, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And don't start that rumor that I have a thing going
no,
on.
No, no,
but,
no, no. All of us love Troll. He's an amazing man. I got to spend a weekend with him up in Haines at the fair.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And you stay in the same place I was.
So. Yeah, no, I'm absolutely thrilled that not only is Ray Troll has contributed to the book, but John Straley, Richard Nelson has an audio CD in the book, Richard Carstensen, John Shane. It's like this Alaska dream team of artists and writers that are all a part of the book. It's not, I mean, all the photography's mine, but again, incredible voices that went into the book as well.
Now look, I'm old enough that books did not have audio tracks and they didn't have trailers on the internet and they some of them didn't even have pictures in them. So what's happened here? I mean, you're talking about, are you a 21st century author? Is that
you know what? I think you have to be these
yeah.
days. I think you have to use whatever medium is available to you to communicate. And the beauty, I think, of all this technology that is available to us is that we have so many different ways to communicate. So in the book, again, we're trying to tell this message of Salmon in the Trees, and I'll explain that in a second. But we're trying to explain it in as many different ways as people might relate to it. So we've got the photographs. There's wonderful essays. Not everyone's going to read the essay, so, but maybe they'll just look at the pictures, maybe look at Ray Troll's illustrations, and then grab Richard Nelson's CD in the back of the book and pop that in and listen to that. But however they're looking at any of those things, hopefully they're going to get this incredible message of Salmon in the Trees.
So tell us about Salmon in the Trees.
Yeah, so, okay, so as a nature photographer and a writer, I'm always on the lookout for interesting stories. And several years ago, I read some, it was a very dry scientific article somewhere that talked about this remarkable connection between salmon and trees in this part of the world. And even though it was dry and very science-based, it stuck with me. And I just couldn't get it out of my head. And I'm like, how can there be salmon in the trees? And it just wouldn't leave my brain. So I knew that I had to come here, photograph it, and tell this amazing story. So Southeast Alaska, as those of you who live here are well aware, this is a place where the forest and the sea are so intertwined that you just cannot separate the two. And probably no other species relies more on both the forest and the sea than salmon do. So salmon bring these ocean nutrients with them in their bodies when they leave the ocean and return to their spawning streams. Lots of hungry bears in this part of the world, some of the highest densities of brown and black bears. They're all, you know, chomping at the bit, waiting for the salmon to come in. And the bears don't really like being around each other, so they're trying to avoid conflict. So they come down to the streams, grab a salmon, and often they'll carry it away into the woods. And often, if it's a good salmon run towards the end, they're not eating all of the salmon, they're just targeting the richest parts of the fish. So a lot of salmon get left on the forest floor. And over time, all of these nutrients from the bodies of the salmon decompose into the soil, and the trees absorb them through their roots. And scientists have actually been able to trace a particular form of marine nitrogen, it's called nitrogen 15, in trees near salmon streams that they can link back to the fish. And so there really are salmon in the trees.
The trees consist of the salmon, and you can actually find it.
Yep.
That is amazing. And that's the center of your book, then.
Yes.
I think. Yeah. Okay. I want to go back to something, to a couple of things that you said when you were talking about your book. You said that you try to communicate any way you can. I hear a woman on a mission here. So the question is, what's the mission? What are you trying to do?
Yeah, well, I made the book to celebrate this unbelievable part of the world, call attention to how amazing it is that there is still a place where this connection between salmon and the trees exists, and then try and help people understand why that connection is important. And not only is it important for the salmon and the bears and the eagles and, 50 different species that rely on salmon, but why it's important for people, for the people who live here, for the people who maybe down south who benefit from all that incredible salmon that comes our way. I live in Washington State, by the way. And and just make people aware, again, of what an incredible place this is. Living in Washington, I see the remnants of what was once a magnificent salmon forest down there. And it no longer is, and it's no longer has been, really, for quite a long time. I think I would just cry if that same thing happened up here. And so, again, to me, it's just such a remarkable connection. It's astounding it still exists in the 21st century, and how lucky we are that it still exists.
And a lot of us are working hard to make sure it continues to exist into the 22nd and 23rd.
Yeah, right? And the amazing thing is, not only does it still exist and is it still, exist in droves here, but we have an opportunity to ensure that it continues. Down where I am, we talk a lot about restoration and, maybe we can bring the salmon back. And there are a lot of great folks and great organizations that are working really hard to do that. But it's so hard to bring something back once it's gone. Mm-hmm. And so here, we don't have that problem. and let's hope it stays that way.
So you're doing two shows tonight, 6:30 and 8 o'clock out at the Visitor Center at the Glacier.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to, it's the fireside, so the big fireplace will be lit up and we'll be able to look out the window and see the glacier through the rain and a little bit of snow that we're looking at in the forecast for tonight. But we'll be able to hear you talk about your wonderful book. You bringing any pictures?
Oh, just a few.
So the screen will be lit up with Amy Gulick's wonderful nature photography.
Yeah, I'll take you on basically the adventure that I went on in order to create all the images that are in the book. And I'm actually going to show you a whole lot more images than are actually in the book.
And as always, there's no charge for these. And this time of year, there's hardly ever any problem parking out there. And the place is warm and dry and wonderfully comfortable. 6:30 for families, 8 o'clock for everybody else. Families, too, welcome at 8 o'clock. Thanks for coming up from Washington and being willing to do one of our firesides.
Oh, you bet.
Great program out there. Monday, Jeff will be back with the show, and he'll be talking about a healing art event with Sarah Newsham from AWARE, and Suzanne Williams will come in to give us a preview of her garden talk. She's doing that Wednesday on raised beds and low tunnels. Andy Klein will be here with Jeff to interview comedian Paula Poundstone. She's appearing Thursday at Centennial Hall. And someone will tell us about student homelessness in Juneau. He'll have Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more. That all happens Monday at 3 on KTOO. And KTOO broadcasts on translators throughout the area. In the Valley and Auk Bay, we're on K276 AF at 103.1. On Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, we're on 101.7 at K269 AO. Gustavus is listening to us on K201 AM at 88.1. K220BT serves Hoonah, that's on 91.9 in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. You can listen to KTOO on K210 AS, it comes over at 89.9 megahertz. And in Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau. We're on digital channel 871, and our sister stations KRNN and KXLL are in 872 and 873. And you can listen to our stream on www.ktoo.org. Pat Moore, been your host today for Juneau Afternoon. Have a good afternoon. We'll see you later.